keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Super happy to be back with you. Hopefully, everyone enjoyed the weekend with all the football stuff going on, but now that the NFL stuff is all over and Monday Night Football is done with, you have no longer any excuses to not tune in to us here every Monday. And in fact, we're live Monday through Friday here on UCY.TV, and that's pretty much the only place you can catch us besides the anti-media/radio tab over at the website. You can catch us either way, and you can listen to us on your phone too if you have a smartphone on your computer. You know, we're doing the whole thing here, no longer on the terrestrial radio stuff. Hopefully, it'll give people more access to getting this information that we consider many times dangerous information. A lot of times people don't want you to read or hear about the stuff that we're putting out through the anti-media, but that's why we're doing it. We're here to push the boundaries. Thank you all for tuning in. Joined by my longtime co-host tonight, DB Schwartz. What's up, bro?
Hey, dude, just, I was kind of blown away at the extent to which Bread and Circus is reaching its apex from Super Bowl L yesterday. I think we'll get into that later. But, yeah, man, you want to watch Rome 2,000 years later, go bye-bye, here you go.
Yeah, seriously, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and deny that I watched the game. I did watch the game. But all the crap in between the guys playing the sport, I mean, it was like watching the damn Hunger Games, dude. It seriously was. And it was just, it was just ridiculous. I enjoy sports, you know, I like sports, I like playing sports, I like watching exciting sports. I don't like watching baseball on TV, it's so damn boring, but, you know, I enjoy watching football, I enjoy the sport of football, playing it myself and that kind of thing, but, man.
The NFL is so much more than sports, isn't it? It's really everything that's wrong with how we pervert everything for money in our culture.
Exactly, man, exactly. I mean, it really is maximizing to the most extent the propaganda, the profiteering, the brainwashing, the subtle advertisements. I'm sure Jake can, like, hit on that a little bit more. We're also joined tonight by Jake Anderson, one of our awesome journalists. What's up, Jake?
Oh, I'm doing well. It's always great to see a guy invoke Budweiser and God in the same sentence after winning the Super Bowl.
And Papa John's.
And Papa John's and Disneyland. I mean, we might as well have just ticked off a bunch of corporate names and then said, yes, I did. Yes, I, what's the eight, the performance-enhancing drug he's accused of taking?
HGH?
HGH. Brought to you by Carl Jr.
No, that's RBGH, the bovine growth hormone. It's a little different.
I agree though that it was like watching the Hunger Games.
Someone told Peyton if he grew udders, it'd be good for his longevity.
Yeah, he's probably got like gills under his suit or something.
Oh man, Jake, it's really good to have you back on. Missing the comical side of this geopolitical analysis that we're constantly harping on over here at the Anti-Media. Glad to have you back. I know you've been busy working on this film that you've been filming up in was it Lake Tahoe, right?
Yeah, Lake Tahoe. Yeah, we finished, and it took me about a week to recover from well, just the stress of it and getting back on track. But yeah, now I'm working on this. I've been researching and working on this article about DARPA that I'm hoping to close out tomorrow. I think you're gonna like it, man.
Very interesting topic. We touch on that relatively often here on the Anti-Media. And of course, this is one of these topics that I guess people that don't follow our site and our page and listen to the radio show, a lot of people probably aren't even aware of this. I'd say 95% of people that are watching the Super Bowl don't have a clue what DARPA is. But DARPA, it's a very advanced program by the Pentagon that employs some of the most brilliant scientists in the country and the world to create like super, you know, like sci-fi type weaponry, drones and AI and stuff that's like advanced warfare stuff. And of course, DARPA, one of the biggest contributors is Boston Dynamics, which is owned by Google. And then they always put out videos about stuff they're creating, drones and androids and robots that can go into the battlefield. But just think about this, is the stuff that they're showing us is probably like what, at least 10 years behind what they're actually working on, you know. So they, you know,
Yeah.
years later they develop something and they're like, hey guys, look what we developed. But what they're actually working on, I'm afraid to know because it's probably some really nasty stuff.
We only find out what they've been working on when we see it unleashed upon someone during some asymmetrical warfare campaign. They keep it under pretty tight wraps until then. But yeah, man, I was pretty blown away by some of the stuff I learned about it, and I'm still kind of compiling it right now. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty shocking some of the stuff they're doing. It's like creepy and like it's not. I mean, people are expected to be like, you know, like they're creating an interdimensional wormhole to Uranus or something. Like it's not that crazy. It's more like, you know, it's more like the levels of data mining that they're working on. It's like they're not going outward, they're going inward, and the battlefield is no longer these, you know, places like Vietnam and Iraq. I mean, they turned America itself, using the auspices of warfare and the national security state, as a reason to turn America itself into kind of a battlefield that they survey. And you know, that's kind of like,
Legally, you
yeah.
know, with NDAA, they've created us as the enemy combatant, and we have been really since World War II. That came about with the internment of the Japanese, along with Germans and Italians, which a lot of people don't know about. So we are the enemy. We have been since the corporation went to war against the rest of the world and realized that eventually blowback was going to come.
Very interesting prospect. I mean, that idea sounds so far-fetched, but I mean, think about the whole Edward Snowden scenario where they want to charge him with treason. You know, treason means that you've betrayed the country to the enemy. Well, the only people that, you know, Snowden betrayed was our own secretive government to the public, you know, and that kind of goes to show what's going on. We got some Snowden news I want to jump into here. We got a bunch of news tonight, so I want to get through it pretty quickly. Those listening in and everyone online, as promised, we're making some improvements to the radio show. We have a live document now where you can follow along with us with links to what we're going to be talking about. Before we go into Snowden, though, I know DB wanted to talk a little bit more about what went on with the Super Bowl, man, because there was a lot of symbolism and stuff, and there's now a big backlash against Beyonce because of the supposed links to police accountability. I mean, I didn't see it myself, I didn't see that part, but
It was a stretch.
Yeah, apparently it's like, oh my God, Beyonce is like on the Super Bowl doing the whole Black Lives Matter thing. I didn't notice it, but you know, people are saying it. I did notice that the dancers had a very maybe a Panthers-esque kind of feel to their outfits and to their routine and all that stuff. But I mean, I maybe it was a stretch. I don't know. But DB, anything else you want to go into on that before we move into the Snowden stuff?
Oh, no, I mean, we can go into it a lot about how it coincides with Black History Month, and it was an homage to Malcolm X with the X on the field and the Black Panther getup and everything like that. And everybody knows that her and Jay-Z are huge supporters of BLM, and they've bailed out protesters. And I think what people are trying to dissect is who's funding everything, all of this, why? Are some of these people legit and actually genuine and want to see, you know, basically law enforcement essentially just take a hand off a particular demographic, man? But the other side is, it is divisive in its own way. I mean, it really is. And you're going to see by reading into this, you'll see there's two distinct sides driven by the media naturally. But, I mean, people are commenting and buying into this shit. And of course, it's somewhere in the middle. It's the gray area. We want the good stuff to happen and none of the divisive stuff, and unfortunately it kind of all goes hand in hand.
I'll be honest with you, there is always the danger of kind of appropriating activist movements in a consumerist setting that devalues it, there's a part of me that really likes when people use the biggest platforms to make giant controversial statements.
Definitely, I'm with you on that, man. I think that it's the perfect platform, and to throw a big wrench into the whole tightly controlled narrative. I mean, I think we saw it a little bit with Peyton Manning over there talking about Budweiser constantly.
But yeah, why was it allowed? You have to know that this is a corporate decision that was allowed.
Good.
So, you
know.
Yeah,
very good.
That's a good point. They want to control the narratives, and having Beyonce as the referee, right? Having this kind of you know, sexualized consumer backdrop for Black Lives Matter is a way to try and appropriate Black Lives Matter and try and make it palatable. But yeah, why? I mean. It's they were trying to make a statement on who's the team that the cops is trying to sue for their estate now. Recently, what's
Oh yeah, that's crazy, man. That's a huge story. We haven't.
But that's what they were. That was their statement when they collected together, when they assembled and made a statement. It was his name that they were promoting. So they had a very specific agenda. But yeah, I mean, frankly, I watched the thing, and I didn't even know. I guess I'm an idiot. I didn't even notice that. I was probably distracted by the beauty of Coldplay's lyrics, but I didn't notice it at the time. And then afterwards, I saw these articles. I was like, holy crap! They really were doing a Black Panther tribute. Wow.
Yeah,
it was really strange, because then the theme was All You Need Is Love, which is using the Beatles font, and then you have Bruno Mars, who's Hawaiian. Hawaiian's going through its, you know, separationist, you know, burps again. So it was really, really poignant halftime show. It had a lot of symbolism to it.
Yeah, it was, and to me it was a good one. It was a decent one. I mean, like I said, I wasn't paying close attention, but it was a lot better than past years, I think. It had much more of an activist tone to it. In my opinion, I think anything drawing attention to the Black Panthers, I think the Black Panthers were a very positive movement for the most part. I mean, it very much is like what's going on today with the Black Lives Matter. It's demonized by half the media and half the country. They managed to turn it into something polarizing when it's something that should be uniting people together, just as the Black Panthers were as well. And, you know, so to me it was at least some progress there in the brainwashing that's going on. But we don't want to put too much stock into that. I want to go back to what DB was saying a little bit ago regarding the whole, much of the country's defense apparatus is now treating the U.S. public as the, public enemy number one. As hypocritical, maybe ironic as that sounds, I think you're very much right. As I mentioned, the way they're treating Snowden, who basically the only thing he did for the most part was alert the American public to the fact that our own government has been eavesdropping on all of our conversations. And they're treating him as a treasonous traitor. We covered this today on the Anti-Media. The story, it broke a couple days ago. In fact, there was rumors of it way back in 2013, but it was confirmed last week that the U.S. sent a plane over to Europe to try to, with plans of capturing Edward Snowden, bringing him back to the U.S. And I hate to know the fate that he had been suffering. He'd probably be sitting alongside Chelsea Manning in a jail cell rotting somewhere. Fortunately, he fled to Russia, which, of course, we know is not the greatest country in the world, and they have much of their own problems with press freedom, civil liberties, and that kind of thing. But ironically, Snowden was able to go find freedom in Russia, and now he's on Twitter, and he's still over there hiding out, doing the whole Assange bit. And, the U.S. had every plan, every aspiration to go capture the guy. Fortunately, he wasn't captured, and he's able to still comment on things. He was tweeting out after this news broke about the rendition flight, is what they're calling it. And Snowden was tweeting out about it and calling out the lies and the hypocrisy. The Danish government initially denied the allegations back in 2013, saying, "Oh no, we don't know anything about this flight." And then a Danish news outlet posted this stuff last week, and they still denied it. And then a couple days later, so much information came out that they were like, okay, we can no longer deny this. Yeah, it actually happened. And so it kind of goes to show the lengths that the U.S. will go to prevent whistleblowing. Now, keep in mind, the Obama administration promised to be a very transparent administration and to treat whistleblowers fairly, as is the case with many politicians and many presidential people that become president. They go back on their promises, and Obama, unfortunately, has turned out to be one of the toughest presidents ever on whistleblowers and truth tellers. And this is just another nail in the coffin of Obama's lies and Obama's promises that he failed to keep. And so we're seeing the trend now, even on the left, with these quote-unquote progressive presidents like Obama was supposed to be, treating whistleblowers like criminals and that kind of thing. In fact, we had a story on the Anti-Media, I think it was about a month or two ago, that Kerry Wedler had covered, about someone in the Whistleblower Protection Agency that blew the whistle on that agency and got fired. I mean, it's just so crazy. Stuff that you can't even make up. I mean, this is the state of the United States. We're no longer valuing freedom of information at the federal level. They treat whistleblowers like criminals. Obviously, Chelsea Manning is rotting in a prison cell. I mean, so many whistleblowers have gone to jail last year, and this year I'm sure it will be no different, unfortunately. But
hey, Nick, I have a question. Perhaps one of you two can answer. How exactly was it that Snowden managed to evade incarceration while Chelsea Manning was brought to a military trial?
Well, Chelsea Manning kind of blew the whistle and allowed her identity to be known, and didn't take any preventative measures. Now, Snowden, I think, there's plenty of people that think Snowden's a plant and all that stuff. I personally don't buy into that, but I think Snowden had so much knowledge about the way that these kind of things are handled that he took a lot of the he took a lot of preventative measures. Anyone out there that has watched the documentary Citizen 4, I believe it's still on Netflix. If not, you can watch it online for free. Just Google it, Citizen 4. You can see the amount of precaution that Snowden took when he went about trying to contact Glenn Greenwald and all the other journalists that he came into contact with. He was very cautious, using encrypted chats, hiding his location, using like kind of like safe houses and things like that. To evade detection. And, if you remember, they tried to get him, I forget the word for it, when they pull someone out of another country, it'll come to me, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, they tried to get him taken out of Hong Kong, but the government at first was like waiting to make sure the legal ramifications weren't going to violate international law. And while they were trying to figure out if they can do it, he escaped into Russia, you know. And of course, Russia is not a friendly country. They're not going to, I think it's called an extradition or whatever. They're not going to extradite
Right.
Snowden from Russia because, you know, Russia's like looking at Snowden like, man, we could, you know, let's keep him safe, let him keep spilling these secrets. You know, that means some borscht. What's that?
And China got everything Russia did too. Let's not kid ourselves about the whole Hong Kong
Of
time
course.
period he was there.
Of course.
And that's the main thing, man, is Chelsea Clinton tried to do the or Clinton, Chelsea Clinton.
Oh
You
my
know what I'm
God.
saying?
Oh,
Yeah, whatever. Whoever
the hero.
tried to do the right thing, man. That was the main thing. He tried to go through the appropriate channels, and he was extremely naive in that regard, although very brave too.
Yeah, Chelsea
And
Manning, you know,
you know.
she kind of drew some red flags while she was enlisted in the army because she tried to raise the flags to her own kind of chain of command. You know, she tried to raise it to her superiors in the army, and she was like, "Look, dude, they're lying to the people. They're lying to the American public about what's going on in Iraq." And the people, her superiors, were like, "Oh, don't worry about it. Just continue doing what you're doing. You know, just ignore that stuff that you don't."
She can never testify either. Is what people don't understand is there'll never be a trial, and she can never testify simply because of the rule prior to the leak of all the information and blackmail. And I'm talking about also the fact that it, you know, she before she transitioned was a gay male and had relations with a lot of guys, and they don't want that to come out. I mean, if it were ever to come out in trial, man, it would be just a huge scandal.
Yep, exactly, and you know that's just all the more reason to look into that story. People, you know, Chelsea Manning is one of those stories that still to this day not many people know about, but it's something that we need to look into. So many good bits of information that the public needs to know, and WikiLeaks did a great job getting that stuff out there for the most part. Assange is now kind of sitting there rotting in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. There was a ruling last week from the UN that said that Assange is being unlawfully detained. We covered that on the anti-media last week. Go ahead and go check that out over at the website because that's something that's pretty important as well. Assange may be able to escape England pretty soon, and I can't imagine. I mean, I know we have a lot of readers from the UK, but I mean, damn, that weather out there sucks. And for him to be trapped inside the embassy at all times in London, I'm sure he's probably pretty depressed and probably doesn't have the brightest outlook on things. But sooner or later, hopefully, after this UN ruling, he'll be able to get out and maybe escape to Ecuador or get to South America somewhere where he'll be safe. You know, where who knows what will happen with that? That's something.
All those women dropped their charges too, Nick, once they were going to have to release their identities to the Swedish court. I don't know if anybody ever followed up, but he's basically sitting in there on a warrant for people that have no charges because they were all plants, man. They were all CIA plants. They were all really hot chicks who made passes at him. He's all, whoa, of course. They all were CIA plants.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, and it happened in Sweden where there's very questionable laws in place regarding that kind of stuff and the charges against him. Even the ones that, even if you're going to believe the charges against him, they're still questionable. I mean, he was charged. One of the cases was he was charged for having sex without a condom. I mean, and
Yeah, and like fellatio was one of them.
in Sweden, that's considered a form of rape. You know what I mean? And so that these charges can be easily fabricated. I don't want to be one of these people that are saying that, you know, cases of rape should not be investigated or anything like that. They should be. But in a case like Assange, a high-profile political figure, and it was right after the leaks came out, and right after he did major damage to U.S. foreign policy, it's like all of a sudden the charges are brought against him. You know, we got to keep an objective outlook on that kind of stuff and understand that this is one of the tactics used against people many times to discredit them or assassinate their character or get them incarcerated or whatever, which in my opinion is the case with Assange. And so that's just something to keep an eye on because we got to be very wary of that kind of stuff. On to the next news here. We got a major primary coming up tomorrow in New Hampshire. I mean, what do you guys make of it, DB?
Well, Bernie's going to absolutely dominate, of course, on that side, and everybody expects Trump to win. So I guess maybe it'll throw a wrench in the Republican side, but seeing as the recount in Iowa had Bernie losing by less than a quarter of a percent, and Iowa's extremely conservative, even among their blue voters, I mean, I'm going to see this as a reaffirmation. He could probably win.
Interesting, interesting. Jake, what do you make, man? Oh, Jake's taking a bathroom break over there. I got some interesting insight here, man. I mean, a poll just came out today that showed Bernie Sanders pulling into basically a tie with Hillary Clinton nationally, and that's huge. That's really huge because, I mean, it's this whole time all the polling showed Hillary Clinton leading by like double. She was like at 60 and Bernie was at like 30, and now it's like pulled even. It's like 48-47 or 48-46, something like that. Very interesting considering the results.
She's just killing herself right now, shooting herself in the foot with this Steinem quote and Albright and having these people that are, you know, supposedly feminist icons really come out as people who are both out of touch and war criminals themselves, who shouldn't be telling us to vote for another war criminal just because she has a vagina. You know, it's becoming so just blasé and apparent, dude. And like the millennials see through it because they read the internet, they read all of our stuff, they read all of everything. And they realize the BS that's the corporate media because they all basically mirror each other and pump out this, you know, corporate political crap, this propaganda.
They,
so
they pump out AP talking points. You know what I mean? And it's no coincidence here. We can't really, you know, it's so easy to see. I mean, it's the AP dictates the entire news cycle, right?
Yeah, and millennials don't watch TV. They don't watch TV. They don't read newspapers and they don't read magazines.
Exactly. And you know, most of our audience on the anti-media here are millennials as well. And so that's interesting development. I think as much as I'm not a participant in the electoral system, I'm not personally a fan of voting. I think it's kind of a waste of energy and momentum and kinetic energy and activist energy and all that stuff. I mean, think about all those. The thing I thought about after Iowa, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching all this stuff unfold, and there's a bunch of accounts of, I mean, the coin flips, okay, that can be excused. I mean, they're odds and stuff, and sometimes you beat the odds, you know, I could excuse that.
Yeah, sometimes you get six, you know, 21s in a row in blackjack.
It's lucky, you know what I mean? Sometimes you get really, really lucky, and I could rationalize that. It's a stretch, but I could rationalize it. But then we look at all the understaffed precincts, even though the voter turnout was much lower for the Democrats than it was in 2008. The fact that now they're auditing, partially auditing some of the results, and Bernie Sanders is edging up even closer. To the point where I've even seen people saying, well, judging by the trend in the partial audit, if the trend continues, and yeah, Bernie Sanders did win that in Iowa. You know, and I felt so bad after seeing that happen and seeing really, you know, Bernie Sanders get screwed after I watched the same thing unfold back in 2012 against Ron Paul. I remember that feeling, and I remember what these, you know, now I know what these guys are going through, all these people that are supporting Bernie Sanders, and I can't help but think that a lot of that energy could be used in a better direction than trying to influence this highly, highly corrupt voting system. The caucus system is one thing. The primaries, I mean, people are like, well, they can't screw as much with the primaries. The caucuses are so complicated and stuff. I mean, but the primaries, man, that's where they use these electronic voting machines and all that stuff. I mean, don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but voter fraud is a real thing. I mean, we saw it take place in Iowa, that the one guy, the one delegate was actually unilaterally switched. And I think we're actually joined on the call tonight by Claire Bernish, who actually covered this delegate switching. Claire, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So, I mean, while we're on this topic of the elections, and I got a few other points to get through, I mean, tell us about this delegate switching. I mean, this literally, like, somebody literally chose to just say, okay, well, you know what, we're going to just take this delegate from Bernie Sanders and we're just going to give it to Hillary Clinton. I mean, what the hell happened there?
Well, they kind of played it off like it was an accident and, you know, people didn't really know the rules and all this other stuff, but it they just literally switched the delegate, and they were so close in percentages that this is actually a huge deal. And then, you know, they requested an audit because this caucus was so close, and they weren't doing it at first, at least. They were just absolutely refusing to do an audit of us, even though the vote was so close. It doesn't make any sense except for, you know, it seems obvious that they were pushing for a Hillary win. Like, the party obviously wanted Hillary to win, and I think it is a bunch of bullshit, actually. I mean, this is, when it's this close, whether there's any question over which delegate was switched or not, there should still be an audit.
And again, Claire, I know you and me are on kind of on the same boat here. We are not Bernie Sanders supporters. We are not people that are still buying into this election stuff. I mean, there may be other opinions on the call, but, you know, when I see bullshit, I see bullshit. You know, we got to call it how it is. And you know, for a guy like Bernie Sanders, sorry, I almost misspoke there. For a guy like Bernie Sanders that is inspiring a bunch of young people that are, you know, actually becoming passionate about politics, and I'm happy that people are becoming passionate about politics. I'm not super excited that they're, you know, trying to become Democrats and trying to go do that whole process. But, you know, everyone has to go and live and learn and, you know, figure it out for themselves. And I did that back in 2012, and, you know, that's where I'm at today. I've kind of learned that that process is highly corrupted, and therefore I don't want to try to change it because it's not worth changing. But,
well,
that's my own opinion. But, you know, the thing is that these poor people out there putting in all their blood, sweat, and tears into this Bernie Sanders campaign, only to see it flushed down the toilet by corruption. You know what I'm saying? And you know, we see the caucus system being corrupted, and this person that went and switched a delegate from Bernie Sanders to Hillary Clinton unilaterally, that is completely bogus. I mean, that's complete voter fraud, in my opinion.
But, you know, there is one good point about that, though. When something like this happens and it comes out and it's exposed, perhaps that will get more people into the realization of how much the whole election thing is a scam and a fraud. You know, this kind of thing probably happens all the time, and we just don't learn about it. We just got lucky this time that it actually came out.
Exactly, exactly. And thankfully, there's a lot of people out there paying close attention. I saw a video on YouTube where there was a guy, I think we talked about this last show, there was a guy that, you know, was changing the process for one of the caucus sites. And there was a young Bernie Sanders supporter there trying to get the guy on video to go on record to say how he was changing the rules, and the guy refused to go on record, and then he tried to get the guy kicked out. I mean, you know, thankfully this stuff is, you know, drawing a contrast here and showing what the hell's going on, because for the longest time, I think people kind of trusted into this system and just, you know, blindly trusted it and say, you know what, yeah, we vote and our voice is heard and stuff. Now, thankfully, technology, smartphones, you know, video phones, live streaming, all that stuff that we have access to now, we can show the corruption in real time, and then you can't hide it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yep. That's
a positive, you know, a positive development there. I mean, if we're going to be under a democratic system, I mean, we got to try to make it real, you know, real results. We don't want to have it affected by big money. We don't want Goldman Sachs or Microsoft or the Diebold company, which is the one that makes the voting machines, to be carrying the fate of all these people that think their voice is being heard, because there's nothing more dangerous than the illusion of democracy, right? There's nothing more dangerous to thinking that your voice is being heard, thinking that everything you're doing is actually, you know, influencing politics, only to have it just be an illusion and not work, because then it makes you not care about the outcome, you know, because you think that you're actually voting. It's like, oh, maybe I lost this time. Oh, Hillary Clinton won, even though everyone I know is supporting Bernie Sanders. Well, just too bad. I guess we got outnumbered. Well, now we're starting to see the corruption in real time, and this is really starting to make people question the system. I noticed a bunch of my friends on Facebook that are Bernie Sanders supporters that were like questioning the process, calling it out for being corrupt, and basically pointing the finger over at the DNC, the Democratic Party, the Hillary Clinton operatives that are over there in Iowa and now in New Hampshire that are causing a lot of this corruption. And so to me, it's like, dude, people are waking up to this stuff. They can carry on this. Maybe they can get away with it this election, but next election, I don't know, man. Maybe they're going to cause so much damage by corrupting this one that next time they won't get away with it. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
That's kind of my hope. I mean, it has to be something like this. I would think that something like unilaterally switching a vote in a caucus would really kind of start the ball rolling for people that have the realization that this is just, it's, you know, it really is a game. And the more you feed into it, the worse it gets.
Yeah, well, the Sanders supporters, I think, are not the kind of people that you want to disenfranchise, and which isn't to say that you want to disenfranchise other groups, but they're a fiery little bunch, and like Nick, you made this point, and I've been struggling with a tech connection here, so you might have already made the point in this show, but yeah, this is you're talking about a generation of people that could see the emperor's wears no clothes in this election if they continue with this this kind of corrupt elections. This could get really messy. I mean, I don't put it past Hillary. I don't put it past the DNC, any kind of moves that we saw Bush do in 2000 in Florida and in Ohio in 2004. This could get really messy and look really bad. And at the end of the day, I think, if we need to fast track the train wreck in order to show that the train is being conducted by a lunatic, then maybe that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of similarities between the Bernie – what are they calling them now? Bernie Bros, right?
Bernie Bros.
They're calling the Bernie Sanders supporter Bernie Bros. I'm seeing a lot of similarities between the Bernie Bros – sorry, the Bernie Bros and the Ron Paul bots from 2012 – very dedicated bunch of people, the young, the highly motivated young people that are going to go, they're going to either win with Bernie or they're going to burn with him. They're not going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and that is going to eventually probably going to sink her campaign, and which, or, in my opinion, may be all part of the whole process, because I don't think the time is not now for a Democratic president, especially following Barack Obama's two terms. It's looking at the pattern here. It's a Republican that's probably supposed to win this coming election. But if you look back at 2012, what happened when they screwed Ron Paul? He was one of the few candidates with an actual youth-based grassroots network that he built up there. Well, you created a bunch of anarchists out of that. And I think that maybe the same phenomenon that we see happening here with Bernie Sanders, if it does turn out that he gets burned by the DNC and by the Democratic Party or the political establishment, whatever you want to call it, you're going to create a bunch of disenfranchised youth that may turn to other sources rather than voting for their activism.
Yeah, and I've been having this argument about and Claire, I think Claire, you wrote the article about the lesser someone on anti-media, you might have aggregated it, Nick. It was the myth of the lesser of two evils argument, and I was just discussing this with my mom that how many straight elections is this argument going to be trotted out when the Supreme Court is already bought and sold anyway? How long are we going to let this fictitious construct allow us to put on the back burner the necessity of a palatable third party in this country? And it's like it's absolutely critical that even people that believe in voting, if you're not in a swing state, don't vote for a major candidate, unless you're in a primary, and we got to have a third party. I guess that's my point.
And dude, what sucks, man, is that I've been on this third party train for a while here, and what sucks now is it looks like the third party option may be co-opted by none other than Bloomberg. Have you seen this?
Right.
Bloomberg,
yeah,
is talking about running third party, and the guy's got billions of dollars to run with. He's like a Trump.
Don't worry, he drinks some Indian Point water.
Oh, there you go. I'd like to drink some Flint water and see how he feels after that.
That's an interesting point. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, especially, I think after this election, there's going to be a legion of disenfranchised voters, people that, we might see the same thing that's going to happen to Sanders could happen to Trump as well. And so you're going to end up having this huge, bunch of disenfranchised voters. And then at that point, we'll start to maybe hear the refrain of needing a third party. And then, yeah, I think you're right. I think they could very well create, in the same way that, they create these disingenuously titled super PACs, like millennial power or whatever, that's, 65-year-old billionaires, that you could see a third party that's, you know, basically you could see a puppet third party very easily. I could see that happening.
But, you know, we need, like, more than just a third party before, right. like, there's any real choice to vote for. There needs to be, like, 7, 8, 9 parties right. to choose from.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah,
that just doesn't fit the deep state narrative, unfortunately.
Coalition governments are a thing in Europe, in fact, I'd argue that European governments are much more representative than American government. I mean, we have a blatant oligarchy if you look at the studies that have been done. European governments, as flawed as they are, and part of the euro and all that crap, they are more representative of their people, I believe. One of the reasons why is because they're much smaller countries. I mean, the United States was set up originally to be on this kind of like federation type of system where each state was kind of its own country and therefore would be a bit more representative of the demographics. Now we've shifted to this much more federal, executive power, much more like a monarchy now the United States has become than it is a republic. And so I think in Europe, it functions a little better for the people, and they're represented a little better because the countries are just so much smaller. I mean, the biggest country in Europe is probably Germany and England as far as population go, and they've only got, 30 million people or so in those countries, and that's like the size of California, you know what I mean? And so it's much easier to have a representative government when you have a small country. When you're dealing with the United States, we're coming up on 350 million people, man. And so it's hard for those 350 million people to feel that they're being represented when there's only, 700 politicians out there calling all the shots. And it's so easy for a country this size with the amount of wealth that we've got for those 700 people to get corrupted. I mean, look at the Congress, look at the executive branch, all the lobbyists, all the advisors and all. They're all corrupted by special interests.
Nick, I like DB's idea. You should run for mayor of Chula Vista, man. I'm serious.
I mean, no, I can't do it.
Hey, I'm gonna run for something up here in Eagan at some point for sure. These people are some straight morons up here.
Dog catcher?
No. I need to be in control of something that matters.
That matters, man. Catching dogs.
You could be the mayor of Minnesota. I know that. That job title doesn't exist yet, but
yeah, you can.
Well, we have Kevin Ellison up here, and we have a weird Al Franken as their senator. We're super strange.
I still like Al Franken. I don't care. I know he's a shill. I don't care. I still love him.
Well, he's just betting on the wrong horse. That's the biggest problem with him.
Right. Yeah, he's on the Hillary. He's on the Hillary train, right?
Yeah, I don't know why, but yeah.
So, Claire, while you're on the call here, we got this huge story, and I know a couple months ago, and thankfully we kind of helped break the whole Porter Ranch, L.A. area story about that huge methane leak. Now we got a repeat. It seems like there's so much huge environmental news going on right now that's flying completely under the radar, I don't know, whether intentionally or unintentionally, whether it's just because they're so busy covering the Super Bowl and the elections and all that crap that's going on. Indian Point, it's just a little bit outside of New York City. It's this huge nuclear facility where they generate a bunch of power. This thing is leaking radioactivity on a massive scale. In fact, there was like a 65,000% increase in radioactivity at Indian Point. I mean, what the hell's going on here? We covered this on the Anti-Media earlier today. Got a bunch of views. A lot of people are reading it, and I think people care about this environmental stuff. They care about radioactive pollution going into their drinking water and stuff like that. What's going on out there outside of New York City?
So it's about 30 minutes outside of New York City. It sits on the Hudson River, and the problem is this plant was originally the first reactor was originally put into use in 1962, and then the other two came online in the 70s. And the other one went offline because it didn't meet expectations. But they still store a bunch of radioactive waste within the first reactor. So it's still there, but it's not being used. These two reactors have had problems. When I was researching for this article, I went back just in one outlet's sources back to 1980 arbitrarily and started looking. And it took me like an hour just to get through 2 years of problems that this plant had had. because there were so many. They've been fined. They've had leaks and leaks and leaks. They had their workers were exposed to radiation numerous times, and they weren't told about it. And I mean, this plant has had problems on top of problems on top of problems, and it's old and it's outdated and it's no longer really meeting the standards. And now it's up for its license to be renewed. They want the company that owns it, Entergy, wants to renew the license for another 20 years for the two reactors. But even the governor of New York has said, you know, this is crazy. So there's all of this going on. Radiation is leaking into the groundwater now. One well measured 65,000% greater radiation than should be allowed. It sits on an earthquake fault that is overdue for a major quake that's actually in a zone of braided faults, so it's actually a very serious area. They are planning on putting...
Don't forget, up in New York, they're doing all that fracking, too.
Yeah, exactly.
That has been...
They're also planning on putting in a high-powered, high-pressure gas line that goes through the property of this nuclear reactor that people who are actually pro-nuclear, who have been in the business for like 5 decades, have said, this is going to create a Fukushima-like disaster if an earthquake hits. And that pipeline just got approval, for sure, like the absolute green light. So all of these really bad things are going on 30 minutes outside of New York City, and it is just an absolute Fukushima-style disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, that's, so.
Sorry to interrupt, Nick. Yeah. I actually talked to a buddy of mine that lives in New York City, and he didn't know about it. So I let him know about it, and he, an hour later, got back to me and said, yeah, one of my buddies is like a maintenance worker or something, and I guess they're starting to talk about what do we do if it actually gets down into the water supply, like how do we filter it out, how much zeolite do we need, like they're making preparations already.
Yeah, exactly. And also, the plant was not ever really designed for a meltdown-type disaster because it's so old. At the time that it was constructed, they didn't think that was even possible. So, I mean, it's like how much more of an indication do you need to shut down a plant than this? And yet they're going to just keep going, and you know they're probably going to get their license renewed and everything else.
It would be $30 billion to replace it, I think, right, if it was like a newer reactor.
I can't remember. I mean, I saw that at some point when I was researching. It's just it would be a lot. It supplies about 30% of the electricity to New York City. So it's a really vital source of power. But it should be either changed, shut down, or converted into something else. I mean, this is just too dangerous. This is too much of a disaster waiting to happen with this many. I mean, 20 million people or something live within the disaster area that would, if there was an actual meltdown.
20 million, I mean, that's a huge chunk there of the population. I mean, a huge percent. It would rank on the percentages. And this is kind of reminiscent of what we've seen go on already happen in the Los Angeles area. And it kind of sucks because, you know, they have to build these, you know, these huge metropolis areas need a lot of electricity. Right. And so they have to, back in those days, they were building up these nuclear reactors in the 60s and 70s prior to having a lot of knowledge about the repercussions that may happen from radioactive leaks and pollution and things like that and the cancer and all that stuff. You know, they didn't have as much knowledge back then. I know they already knew it was problematic, but now we know what it really does. It causes all kinds of cancers and all kinds of really horrible conditions in people. But, you know, this is very... very similar to what happened in LA with this, I think it was called the Santa Susana area leak. And of course, it's even in the same area that this damn methane leak is going on. But there's a bunch of people in the Los Angeles area, which is almost the size of the New York metropolitan area, that are now being, you know, exposed to radioactive pollution and stuff from a leak that happened way back in the day, 60s and 70s, and it's still there and it's not going away. It's never been cleaned up. People, there's a bunch of cancer clusters all around the area, and no one is really getting any answers. There's a huge cover up. Nobody wants to talk about it. Scientists that formerly studied it and now changing their opinions. I mean, big time money going into this thing because nobody wants a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit on their hands. So they pay off the scientists and they cover up the sources and that kind of thing.
I want to make one more point about the Indian Point site too. Is everybody always points to like the nuclear problems in California with the plants that sit on fault out there, except those plants were planned to be in earthquake zones, and the one in New York was not, because this fault was not necessarily realized at the time how badly it could actually affect the plant. So it was not built to withstand any earthquake whatsoever. So there's that too.
Yeah, and you know, as I was going to bring up, is that the fracking going on there in upstate New York and areas around that state. There's been several studies now that have shown that fracking increases the probability of earthquakes and has the capability of reviving, you know, fault lines that have been dormant for a long time. And so, you know, we're talking about some of these fault lines out there in New York that may have been dormant for a long time being reawakened because of the experimental oil drilling that we're doing out there. For the fracking and all that stuff, and you know, this is gonna possibly cause earthquakes where they weren't expecting them to happen. And as you mentioned, Claire, I mean, this reactor is sitting right on top of a fault line. This is literally a Fukushima just waiting to happen.
Yeah, and there was actually a tremor on this. It's kind of a series of faults, but the main part of the fault that goes through, like, very near this plant, there was actually a tremor in August on this fault. So we know that it's going to be active. The USGS actually upped the earthquake risk for the area in their 2014 risk assessment. So, I mean, this is a very real thing. And, you know, maybe it's too overwhelming for people to process, but it's very, very real and very much sitting there and ready to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, a bunch of the people in New York City, I know that, you know, New York City is one of the most expensive cities in the world to live in, and I know a lot of people living in the city are below the poverty line, and they're pretty much stuck. You know, they can't really leave. And so that a lot of people that live in New York aren't going to have, if something does happen, they're not really going to have the option to leave. You know, and maybe Trump and, you know, those type of people may be able to get out of there and move to their Malibu mansions or wherever the hell they live.
And even if they could, it's going to take forever.
Yeah,
maybe Trump can build a wall around the plant and save us from it.
There you go. I mean, that's what they tried to do with Fukushima. They tried to build an ice wall and it didn't work. You know, didn't keep that illegal radiation out. Yeah, I mean, that's a great idea. Maybe Trump, you know, maybe we have a reason to support Trump for president. He could build a big wall around that every nuclear reactor, keep all the illegal radiation out. You know what I mean? No, but yeah, it's pretty bad. I want to go back here a little bit to the election stuff. This thing in New York is huge. I mean, anyone, I don't know what to tell people, man. I mean, like I said, most of the people in New York, the majority of people living in New York City are probably pretty much below the poverty line. They're living in government housing, the projects and things like that. And they're pretty much stuck. They can't really leave. They work these kind of retail type jobs that don't pay much, and the rents are just outrageous in New York City. I mean, the median price for a house out there, I mean, I can't even imagine. It's probably north of 1.5 million or something like crazy like that. You know, most of the majority of people in New York City don't own their homes. They rent apartments that are subsidized, and they work very low paying jobs and things like that. I mean, that's the kind of nature of these huge metropolis cities. But you know, if you live out there, make preparations where you can. I mean, just understand it's a risk. You know, you're living in a risk area, and if something bad does happen, a bunch of people are gonna be trying to leave at once too. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Just like here in the Southern California area, highly, highly populated area, we've got something like we've got about over 20 million people in our area too, in Southern California metropolitan area, including like LA, Riverside, and San Diego counties combined. You know, you got north of 20 million people in that area. And if there's ever a big quake off the coast and there's a tsunami, well, guess what? Everyone's going to be trying to leave at once, so you're going to be stuck. That's something else you got to keep in mind if something bad goes down in the New York metropolis. Everyone's going to be trying to get out at once, and you know, New York traffic's already bad as it is. Everyone trying to leave at once, you're going to be stuck. So you got to keep those kind of things in mind if you're living in those areas.
Entire communities that live in those catacombs, so that's going to be kind of like what they'll probably use as the canary in the mine kind of situation if these people start getting sick and coming up.
Yeah, good point, man. I mean, we're going to start seeing the side effects here of this leak as has been reported. It's already entering into the groundwater, this radiation. So we're going to, you know, sooner or later start seeing people pop up, cancer clusters and things like that. Then you know that it's getting bad, and then, you know, take it as you will. Next steps need to be planned out for people living in those areas, unfortunately. Anyway, let's get back to this election stuff, because I want to talk first about Rubio, man. And this guy, I've been saying it since day one here. I don't know how long I've been saying it. It's probably been over a year. Ever since Rubio entered the race, he's kind of that candidate that the establishment has been trying to pump. In the last Republican debate, he really slipped up, though. And this, to me, was just hilarious. I love seeing this guy stumble and seeing him eat his words. But he kept repeating the same exact line. And in fact, he repeated it four times. Chris Christie, as much as I despise that guy, he called him out on it and hung him up by his words. But Rubio, I mean, I think I can hear the establishment trembling now, because Rubio really slipped up, and he's like their horse. He's the guy that all the money is going to. He's the bet to win. If you look at the prediction markets, because, you know, nowadays they gamble not only on sports and on you know, card games, they gamble on politics. Rubio has been in charge of the money pot for a while now. All the big money is going towards Rubio, and everyone thinks he's going to be the Republican nominee, and I think he will be. But this debate really kind of threw a wrench into the system there. Rubio may have buried himself. And so the establishment is – I'm looking now, maybe the establishment is going to try to pick a new horse. I'm not sure who it'll be. Maybe it'll be Kasich, the governor of Ohio, or maybe it'll be I mean, Jeb Bush is now pulled into second place over in New Hampshire. I mean, as crazy as that sounds, that's happening. But Rubio really shot himself in the foot in the debate. I love to see it happen. I love to watch it. I love to hear those sound bites, because I can't stand the guy. Rubio is like the most prepackaged candidate I've ever seen. His talking points are the same every time, and he's like, he's basically the Trump campaign, but more proper. I'm going to make America great again by spying on all you assholes and starting a war with Russia. And then that's Rubio's campaign. And then, you know, I want to talk a little bit. Rubio now, he shot himself in the foot. I hope he goes under. Who knows? They may try to still float his boat, or they may go with a new establishment horse by Kasich or one of the other actors. Hillary Clinton is running into big trouble with Bernie Sanders. I mean, looking at her campaign, they're getting really desperate now. Apparently, anyone that is critical of Hillary Clinton is a sexist, according to the latest media reports. You got Madeleine Albright, the former, Secretary of State at one point, that basically said it was okay to kill 500,000 Iraqi children, is saying that there's a special place in hell for anyone that doesn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Whatever hell is to her, I don't want to speculate here, but I mean, I don't think serial killers or rapists would even end up in the same hell that Madeleine Albright would end up in. I mean, she literally sat there and tried to rationalize the deaths of half a million children. It's crazy. And to sit there and try to pull this moral high ground and say, if you don't vote for Hillary, well, then you're just not doing the womanly thing. That's bad. That's horrible. And then you got this other quote-unquote feminist activist that said that anyone not supporting Hillary, or in particular women that are supporting Bernie Sanders, are just in it for the boys.
Right, yeah.
To get dates. I mean, coming from a feminist activist, I mean, this is a slap in the face to women everywhere that are politically active. I mean, what the hell do you guys make of this?
I think that's disgusting.
I don't think she goes to these rallies. I mean, they're not stocked with like a bunch of hunky dudes.
DB, you've been there. Tell us about. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, I'm just saying. I did go to them, and I mean, there's plenty of everybody, but it's definitely not. There's not a lot of Bernie bros around.
These women are doing a disservice to feminism, to progressivism, and to democracy with this ridiculous propaganda in support of Clinton in this way. It's disgusting.
And ethics.
Yeah, and ethics.
I was under the impression Madeleine Albright was some kind of neocon. I mean, I didn't know any difference. She sat there and said it was okay to kill 500,000 Iraqis. I mean, that sounded like a Republican to me. She's out there stumping for Hillary Clinton. This is showing signs of despotism. The establishment wants Clinton. They want
yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Everybody in.